Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chazdai, Pesach Vansir, Ruven Hoffman, Bari Hoffman, Harav Meir Kahana, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, this past week we started our campaign to try to influence Israeli elections and American elections. In Israel, we're going to have elections for the Israeli Knesset, the Israeli parliament, on March 17th. March 17th is roughly 3 months from now. And we're, through our Hebrew movement, going to do what we can to make our voices heard and to try to influence whatever we can influence. And in the United States, we've started now our campaign to try to influence the 2016 American presidential election. We'll see what we can do. We'll see if we can have any impact. In any event, at the very least, we're reaching thousands of people with our message through our Facebook pages, our YouTube channels, our videos, our main pages in English and in Hebrew, and our forums. So at the very least, we're spreading our ideology and hopefully waking thousands of people up. How much influence it will actually have on the upcoming Israeli election or on the American presidential election in 2016, I don't know. Only time will tell. We try our best. We're going to try our best to do what we can to influence events. But this past week, we at least started that campaign. In Hebrew, I know that most of the people listening to this program don't speak Hebrew, so you're probably unaware of the Hebrew videos that we've done, but let me just give you a quick rundown of what we've done in Hebrew, just to show you the type of public education that we do, so that people will know how we're trying to alert the people of Israel to what's going on. Our first video last week was on Aryeh Deri and the Shas Party. The Shas Party is a corrupt, evil, hypocritical left-wing party that claims to be religious and that misleads Sephardic Mizrahi Jews, who are usually right-wing and who usually can't stand Arabs or Muslims because they lived under the Arabs and Muslims and know how cruel and evil and sadistic and Jew-hating the Arabs and Muslims are. So they're usually right-wing. But the Shas Party tells them that they have to support giving up land and that they have to support various other left-wing positions. And the Shas Party supported the Oslo agreements, for instance. The Shas Party was responsible for the Oslo agreements. Shas had the balance of power that enabled Yitzhak Rabin and Shimon Peres, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, to bring Yasser Arafat and 80,000 armed Arab Nazi terrorists into Israel under the Oslo agreements. And as a result of those Oslo agreements, 1,800 innocent Jewish men, women, and children were brutally murdered by the 80,000 armed Arab terrorists that were brought into Israel, that were invited into Israel under the Oslo agreements. Under the Oslo agreements, Israel invited these terrorists to come into Israel, led by Arafat himself. And this led to mass murder and terrible bloodshed, which we're still seeing to this day. Shas, the so-called religious party, supported these agreements and supported the Rabin Perez regime that did this, and they were the balance of power in the Knesset. If they hadn't supported it, we wouldn't have had the Oslo. We wouldn't have had Oslo. So this evil, disgusting, vile party, they call themselves religious, and they support the most left-wing evil positions when it comes to the land of Israel, when it comes to the Arab Nazi enemies of Israel. Anything in exchange for money. The Israeli government can control them by just saying, we're going to give money to your institution, now you vote the way we want you to vote. That's how they operate. All bribery and all corruption. Aryeh Deri, who is the head of the party, actually spent 3.5 years in prison. He was convicted and he spent 3.5 years in Israeli prison on corruption charges. He was convicted of taking bribes, convicted of extortion, convicted of all types of the most vile practices, stealing, corruption, bribery, extortion, everything you can imagine. The worst nightmare scenario for a politician. The lowest of the low. And he's the head of the party again. He got out of prison and now he's the head of the party again. And this is a party that, again, claims to be religious. This is also the party that threw me out of Israel. They're the ones whose interior minister, Eli Suisa, Yamach Shmo V'Zichro, signed the expulsion order throwing me out of Israel while he was meeting with Arafat and PLO terrorists. Chaim ben Pesach he threw out of Israel, but Arafat and the PLO Nazi terrorist mass murderers who have murdered, who before, even before Oslo murdered thousands of Jews since the 1950s, these PLO Nazi mass murderers, he would meet with and he invited them into Israel, but Chaim ben Pesach, he expelled, he ordered me expelled. This is the type of unbelievable Judenrat capo behavior from this evil party. And so, We've been trying to expose them for a long time. They now have about 9 or 10 seats. I don't remember if it's 9 seats or 10 seats. They have 9 or 10 seats in the Israeli Knesset right now out of 120 seats. They used to have 17 at one point. At their peak, they had 17. So they've gone down a little bit to 9 or 10 seats. And we hope to cause them problems in the election and to reduce that. Let's see what happens on election day on March 17th. But we want to reduce their strength in the Knesset as much as possible. One of their leading members, Eli Yishai, who was actually one of the half-decent people that actually was in that party. He was actually half-decent, believe it or not. He was a religious guy and he felt he should join the party because they have rabbis and other people. And I'm not excusing the fact that he participated in a party that was very evil and corrupt, but he was actually one of the half-decent, half-honest or ethical people in that party. They basically have thrown him out. He's going to form his own party now and run independently. At least that's the way, that's what the reports are. And if that happens, that will take votes away from Shas in the Haredi community, and that's something that we certainly will encourage. So we're going to try to influence things. We did a video on Aryeh Deri. We did a video exposing the fact that he's an extreme leftist. We did a video exposing the fact that Uri Avneri, who openly calls for the destruction of Israel, says on the video that Aryeh Deri is more of an extreme left-winger than he is. This extreme left-wing communist, Uri Avneri, who openly calls for Israel's destruction, who said that he wants to be a human shield to protect Yasser Arafat. Uri Avneri said, if anybody tries to harm Arafat, I will be a human shield to protect Arafat. Uri Avneri, that same Uri Avneri in this video, we show him saying that Aryeh Deri, the so-called religious leader of the so-called religious Shas party, is more extreme than I am. He's more of a leftist than I am. I mean, can you imagine this? And he's posing as a religious, this is supposed to be a religious party? So we did a video exposing that. And I thought that was very important. And we're really going to go after Shas in this election. We're going to expose them. Again, they have, I don't remember if it's 9 seats or 10 seats in the Knesset, but they have 9 or 10 seats. We're going to go after them. We're going to do everything we can to give them a hard time in the election, and at least to make as many people as possible aware of the villainy of the perfidy of that evil party. And then we did a second video, exposing Moshe Kahlon. Moshe Kahlon heads a party now, a new party that he started called Kulanu. He was in the Likud, he left the Likud, and now he formed a new party called Kulanu. Kulanu means all of us. And when he says all of us, he doesn't include the Jews in Judea and Samaria, because he attacks and condemns the Jews in Judea and Samaria. But he does include the Arabs, whom he loves, because he's another leftist. He's a leftist, but he tries to pose as though he's not really left-wing, that he says, I'm a Likudnik. He says, I'm a Likudnik that knows how to give up land. I'm a Likudnik that understands that you have to be willing to give up land. That was his statement this past week. So we did a video on that, exposing how evil that is, how absurd it is. Israel has to give up land. The Arabs have 600 times as much land as the Jews in 23 states surrounding this tiny little pipsqueak Jewish state, and the pipsqueak Jewish state has to give up land. I mean, what, the problem is that Israel is too big? The problem is Israel is too small. And this is what we said in the video in Hebrew. And this self-hating Jew, Kahlon, Moshe Kahlon and his party, are saying Israel has to give up even more land. That Israel basically has to commit national suicide. So we expose them as leftists. We want people to know. They may get votes from the left, but we don't want them getting votes from good Jews. at least from our videos, at least good Jews who see our videos will be aware of what the situation is, of what these parties are all about. So we did a video exposing his party. And we're going to release, as soon as I finish this program tonight, as soon as I finish recording SJTF, I'm going to release a third Hebrew video that I just did on Avigdor Lieberman. His party is called Yisrael Beitenu, which means Israel is our home. And he's another corrupt, evil person. He tries to brainwash the Russian Jews, who are usually right-wing. He tries to brainwash them to be leftists. And he's also a leftist, by the way. He says that he's even willing to give away Jerusalem. And the news media says he's an extreme right-winger. An extreme right-winger who wants to give Jerusalem to the Arab terrorists. That's an extreme right-winger. This is how twisted, how distorted, how unbelievably distorted the reporting and everything else is on Israeli politics and the way is crazy Jews look at their political situation in Israel. We are the only voice of sanity there. The insanity, the craziness, the lunacy is beyond words. Avigdor Lieberman, who says that even parts of pre-1967 Israel, where Israel's only 10 miles wide, Israel's only 6 to 9 miles wide, even parts of pre-67 Israel should be surrendered for so-called peace. And he's called an extreme right-winger. And while all of this is happening, of course, they're freezing Jewish building and they're allowing Iran to build nuclear bombs. And Jewish kids are being brainwashed in schools instead of being given a Jewish education. All the wrong things are being done. And so it's very important that our voice be heard. Because we're the one voice of truth, the one voice that tells truth to the people of Israel. It's very important that our voice be heard. And we're going to do what we can to try to influence things. So I just gave you three videos that we just did in the past week. One on Shas and Aryeh Deri. One on Moshe Kachlon and the Kulanu Party. And one on Avigdor Lieberman and Yisrael Beitenu. Those are three videos we just did. We're going to be doing many more. So at least some Israeli Jews are going to be exposed to real, uncompromising, principled truth. Real truth. And I think if we weren't there, there'd be no one telling the real pure truth to the people of Israel. And that would really be an even worse tragedy than what we have today. At least, thank God, at least we're there so that there's someone telling the truth. That's in Hebrew. The English language videos you yourself have been able to see, because the people watching, listening to this program do understand English. So you've been able to see the English language videos. We did two last week on Rand Paul, that Jew-hating, vicious, evil, phony establishment, political prostitute. We did two on him. And I'm going to release a video after the recording of this program, a third video that you haven't seen yet on Ted Cruz, praising Ted Cruz for his attempt, his courageous attempt to fight the Obama amnesty order, giving amnesty to illegal aliens, and how the Republican establishment supports Obama's amnesty order. Despite what they say, they really do support it. They support amnesty for illegal aliens. They just pretend and put up a phony fight that has no meaning. And then when someone like Ted Cruz really does try to fight it effectively by trying to cut off the funding for granting amnesty to these illegal aliens, if you cut off the funding for this, that would be a serious challenge to Obama's amnesty order. That they don't want to do. That the Republican leaders and the Republican establishment people don't want to do. They only want to do ineffective, nonsensical things that have no real impact, because they're complete liars and phonies and demagogues and frauds. And then when Ted Cruz tries to do something genuine about the problem, they all attack him in the news media, the left-wing news media, of course, which also supports the illegal aliens. They of course, all pile on and attack him. So we are obligated to defend him. And we're going to defend him. And his fight is our fight. We're going to be defending him. He is a good person, and we're going to do our best to help him. I don't know how much we can do, but we're going to try our best, and we're coming up. You're going to see me release a video that's already, I mean, I've already done the video. You're going to see me release a video that I'm going to upload later tonight defending Ted Cruz. So just wanted you to know that we're now in the thick of things. We're now launching. Last week we really launched our campaign to influence the Israeli elections in March and the American presidential election in 2016. We're on the move now. We're doing what we've spoken about for months that we were waiting to do. This is, I think, the right time. And so you're going to see, God willing, you're going to see many, many videos and a real big concerted campaign to try to influence things and to try to reach people with our message. Now, you know that in the past with our videos, I mean, we reached large numbers, hundreds of thousands of people were reached with our videos against Barack Hussein Obama in 2012. It was not enough to defeat him for re-election. That's true. But at least many people did see a Jewish voice of truth and Jewish voices. We had a number of people in our movement that did videos. And hopefully we'll be able to even have a bigger impact this time. And God willing, I'm hoping that this time we'll actually, the person we're supporting will actually get elected, hopefully. You know, let's hope for that. But, you know, even if the person we're supporting, let's say for President of the United States, obviously an organization with our very limited budget, it's very hard for us to, you know, to elect a president in a country the size of the United States with 130 or 140 million people voting. Obviously, we don't have the budget to reach 130, 140 million people with our message. But I don't, whether our guy wins or loses, whether he wins or loses, obviously it's better if he wins. But regardless of whether he wins or loses, it's never a waste. Because if we're reaching people with the truth and educating them about Israel, about issues that are important in America as well, if we're reaching them and educating them and bringing the truth to them, that is never a waste. That's important. You never know down the road where these videos, where you're going to see good results from these videos, how this is going to affect how people behave, how people act, or what it will lead to eventually down the road. It is never a waste when you try to wake people up and when you try to do the right thing. It's always worthwhile to do everything you can to try to change things. And that's what we're going to do. And I think you know that our videos are usually pretty persuasive and pretty powerful. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what we can do. But I'm excited that at least we've started, because I've been looking forward to this. I've been speaking to you about it for months. I've been looking forward to our launching these two campaigns for the Israeli elections, for the American election. I've been speaking to you about it, and now we finally have, so I think it's going to be an exciting time for us. Our main sites are definitely gaining traction. If you're following it, you'll see that Shlomo is doing such a magnificent job on the English language site. There are a lot of articles there, and more and more activity. You don't see all of the activity. We do see it because we have the stats. So we see that the activity is increasing day by day, week by week. So if we continue at this pace, we're gonna have a nice sized audience. We're gonna have a pretty nice sized audience on those two news sites if we continue at this pace. It won't be as big as we want. We want millions of people, but at least thousands of people will be influenced. And I think if you go to the news sites, I think you'll see that they're impressive. And I think you'll see that we bring you a collection of news that you don't get anywhere else. So we're trying our best to wake people up. We're trying our best to alert people before it's too late. God willing, may Hashem help us so that we can achieve this goal. And please pray for us. Pray for us that we're able to wake people up. Pray for us that we can reach as many people as possible and that we can have the positive influence to make this a better world. And if we all get into if we all work together in a team effort, we'll reach far more people. And that's why I'm urging you to do the following. I'm urging you to join and comment on our news sites. Those of you who speak Hebrew, on both the English and the Hebrew sites, if you speak Hebrew, on both sites. Those of you who only speak English, go to the English site. Join the English site and comment on the English site. And be active on the English site. And spread the word. Spread the word about it. It's an impressive site. and I think it's it looks professional. It is professional, and I think it's impressive, and so spreading the word and helping us and commenting all is very important. Everything you do on that site goes into the search engines, just like what you do on the forum goes into the search engines. So when we have more activity on the site, that means there's more on the search engines. There's more. We have more of a presence on the search engines. So help us with that. Join, comment on the news sites, and spread the word, and bring people to our news sites. Also, please promote our videos. Please promote these videos wherever you can. Like and comment and do all the other things, and promote them. If you have Facebook page, if you have a Facebook page, if you have a YouTube channel, friends that you want to make, you may want to email, promote our videos as well. Show them to people, and let's spread the word as much as we can. That's also very important. So our main news sites are videos. As a team, we should be promoting this. We should all be working to publicize this as much as possible as a team, because we are all a team. We're like a family in JTF. We're like a team, and we have to work together if we want to succeed. And last but not least, of course, the more financial support we have, the more people we reach, the more people we can reach, and the better job we can do. Our biggest downfall is our budget, is our meager budget. So the more financial support, the better. And it really does make a difference. Every contribution does make a difference. So please, those of you who are helping us, God bless you. And if those of you who haven't been helping us financially, whatever you can afford, whatever you can do, and you can, and most of you can afford to help in some way. It's a worthy cause. Help us so that we can try to make a difference and so that we can reach as many people as possible with the truth. Checks, money orders, cash donations sent to the post office box through the regular mail. Very, very important. Also, if for those of you who don't want to, who would prefer not to have to go through the regular mail, who feel it's more convenient online, that's also fine. No difference to us. If you want to do it online, you can go to our donate button on our Hebrew main page, on the Hebrew main page, hayamin.org. On top, on hayamin.org, on top, in English. The whole page is in Hebrew. But on top, in English, there's a donate button. You just click on the donate button, and in several minutes, you can very conveniently contribute to us online. So your financial support is deeply appreciated and does make a difference. And God bless the wonderful JTFers who are supporting us financially, who are generously helping us. God bless you. So we've started, and I think we should all feel like we're part of something now. On the Hebrew site, we're part of an effort to expose evil parties and evil political leaders and try to reduce their presence in the Knesset as much as possible and try to make people aware of what the real truth is. And on the, and I don't know whether or not, you know, Eli, for instance, Eli Yishai is starting this new party. He was in Shas. He's starting a new party that at least he's reported to be starting. They're reporting that he's going to start a new party that's a breakaway from Shas. That would actually be good. That could hurt Shas, and that would actually be very good. So that's one of the things that we would be encouraging and backing up and supporting in the Hebrew movement. And there may be other, if there are other situations like that in the elections, we of course will immediately grab on to whatever situation may arise that could be a benefit to the Jewish people and that could help Israel and that could help remove the cancer of really evil, corrupt politicians that are destroying the Jewish state. So it's very important. Our effort there is very important. And our effort in the United States, of course, to elect the next president is obviously important. You know, we're all part of Jews for Cruz now, the Jews for Cruz campaign, even those of us that aren't Jewish. And we have, of course, a lot of members in JTF who are not Jewish. You don't have to be Jewish to be part of Jews for Cruz, but hopefully we'll be able to influence things on his behalf in the election, and we'll be able to expose the big phonies that are running in the big phonies that are running against him in the Republican primary. All right. So that's where we are. That's where we've started, and I'm pumped up and ready to go, and I hope all of us are. And again, if we work as a team, I think we can accomplish things. I think we can accomplish important things if we all work together as a team. Just think, if all of us, if everyone in the Hebrew and English movements, if all of us are active and really try our best and are creative and figure out ways to promote this together. If all of us do that and take some time and effort and financial support, if we all do that, think of what we might be able to accomplish. Think of what influence we might be able to have in order to help Israel and the Jewish people, and in order to also wake up the American people about the American presidential election. Great. Let's go on now to our questions from our great JTFers, and we start off with our great friend Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, "Your thoughts on Syrian Christians fleeing to Turkey of all places," unquote. Well, obviously, that's not a good place for Christians to be. Turkey's a Muslim country, but the Syrian Christians who are trapped in northern Syria have nowhere else to go. That's the only border. For some of them, that's the only border that they could run to. And that's the insanity of the situation. I don't know why Christians remain in a country like Syria. I think if they go to Turkey just to escape from Syria, that they should then get out of Turkey and never return to any Muslim country again. I don't believe that it's wise for non-Muslims to live in Muslim countries. I think it's crazy. I think it's actually suicidal. But once they're trapped, there's nowhere else to run, and it's a very bad situation, because the Christians in Syria are being killed. They are being killed, just as the Christians in Iraq and Egypt and other Muslim countries are facing terrible persecution and even murder. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And we go now to our great friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, can you explain the meaning and the story of Chanukah? I wish you and my fellow JTFers a very happy Chanukah. Thanks," unquote. And of course, we wish you, Joe, a very happy Chanukah. And yes, all JTFers, Chanukah begins this week. And we certainly wish all of our great JTFers a wonderful Chanukah. Chazal, who are the rabbinic sages in the Talmud, teach us that ancient Greece represents darkness, choshech. Now you would think, wow, Greece? You mean the Greece of the philosophers and the art and sport and the Olympics? That Greece, that place of enlightenment, which is pretty much the foundation, the original foundation of Western civilization and Western culture, that represents darkness? Yes. Precisely because they claim to be enlightened and they convince people that they represent light, they actually represent darkness. Because the things that they promoted were nonsensical things that don't give any meaning to life, that actually ruin people's lives and take things away from people's lives. For instance, sports. Now, I do believe that sports are healthy, and that if you want to play, I happen to love baseball, but if you want to play, I haven't played in years, you know, because I'm 58 years old, but I used to love to play, let's put it that way, and I guess I would still like to play now. I mean, I can run now, I'm still in pretty good shape, but I personally love baseball. I love playing baseball, and other people love various other sports. If you like sports to keep yourself in shape for health reasons, it's good. Sports, I think it's excellent for health reasons, as exercise for your cardiovascular system, for exercise, for health. Excellent. However, the type of sports obsession that we have in American society and in Europe and around the world, and Israeli society too, where people kick a ball, or where people shoot baskets, and people are obsessed with shooting baskets. There, you know, it's one thing if you shoot baskets for your own health, for your own good well-being. That I think is wonderful. But to do it, but to watch black giraffes throwing bulls in baskets or just reaching over to the basket, because some of them are practically 7 feet tall, or at least they look that, they look like they're 7 feet tall, to watch these black giraffes who have brains the size of a peanut playing these games, and to worship the players and to be obsessed about it and to watch it and to spend so much of your life, that is insane. And that was something that Greek culture encouraged. Aside from the fact that Greek culture, of course, encouraged idolatry and worshiping of various gods and philosophical views that were not good views, that very cruel type of philosophical, a very cruel philosophical outlook on life. So Hanukkah was a rebellion against that Greek culture that they tried to impose on the Jewish people. The Greeks came in, they invaded Israel, the Greeks, the Syrian Greeks actually, the Hellenists. They came in and invaded Israel. And Greece was a huge empire at that time. This is before the Roman Empire. You had the Greek Empire, which was gigantic, a huge empire. And they came in, and this empire, by the way, stretched on three continents. I mean, the Hellenist influence, the Hellenist Empire was in Africa, Asia, and Europe, three different continents. And this is in ancient times. They come into this country, Israel, and they see a people that most of the Jews were willing to become Hellenized. Most of the Jews were willing to vote for Obama. Most of the Jews were willing to be assimilated. But you had this very stubborn minority of Jews who insisted that they were not going to be idol worshippers, and they were not going to become part of Greek culture, and they were not going to become philosophers who were going to say, oh, even if there is a God, he doesn't pay attention, which is what Greek philosophy believes, which is ancient Greek philosophy, that if there is a God and a creator, he doesn't pay attention to his creation anymore. He doesn't, you know, he's Zeus, he lives where he lives, and he has his own life and his own affairs, but isn't concerned about the creatures that he created. He leaves them on their own. And just all other types of things that go completely against what God's intentions are for the world. There were Jews who started a rebellion against this, very brave Jews, the Maccabees. And, you know, the interesting thing is, those Jews now Hanukkah is a very popular holiday because it comes at the same time as Christmas. And all the assimilated, self-hating Jews want to have a Jewish version of Christmas. That's not the purpose of Hanukkah. The purpose of Hanukkah is a very specific Jewish holiday that is the opposite of what the self-hating, assimilated Jews want to do. It's the opposite. Hanukkah was a rebellion against assimilation and intermarriage. Hanukkah was a rebellion against those who don't want to maintain Jewish identity. Hanukkah was a rebellion, and in fact, Jewish traders were killed by the Maccabees. The Maccabees killed Jewish traders in the Hanukkah revolt. And so Hanukkah is the opposite of what the left-wing, self-hating Jews who now celebrate it, it was really a rebellion against people like them. The truth is, Hanukkah represents lightness, and we light candles in order to bring lightness into the darkness of the world, because the world became a dark place because of the Greek Hellenistic Empire, the Greek polytheistic Hellenistic Empire that brought hedonism and polytheism and materialism and all types of isms that were very harmful to the human soul into the world, and glorified them, and belittled and ridiculed and attacked the selfless, idealistic, and loving truth that God wants us to believe in, and the true faith that God wants in the world. And so Hanukkah was a rebellion against that. And that rebellion, that festival of lights, was a rebellion against the darkness. And as a result of the rebellion against the darkness, the Jewish people continue to exist today. Just imagine if there hadn't been that revolt, if the Jews had been wiped out and assimilated and disappeared because of the Greek culture. Imagine what would have happened. The whole world would have been plunged into darkness. The whole world. There wouldn't have been the Bible, and there wouldn't have been the influence of the Torah and the Bible. And everything would be theater. You know, the Greeks also gave us theater, which is fantasy. Television shows and theater and Broadway shows. This is all fantasy. Judaism wants you to believe in reality. Your real life, not reality television shows, because that's not reality. Real, what really you should be doing in this world. What you should really be doing to make this a better world. Not to live in fantasy. Not to be acting and live in fantasy. A life that is based on fantasy is a useless, worthless, empty life. We need to face the reality of how to live a meaningful, idealistic life. That's what Judaism challenges us to do. And Western culture, unfortunately, which takes after Greek Hellenism, with materialism and the type of sport, the type of idealizing of sports figures, mostly black sports figures, and theater and Broadway and Hollywood. That's Western culture. And Judaism is in rebellion against that. Judaism says that we're supposed to live idealistically and we're supposed to live for a higher purpose, that we all have a higher calling in this world. And it's not a fantasy play. And it's not fantasizing about a sports figure. It's not about kicking a ball or shooting a hoop. It's really changing the world forever. Changing the world and making it a better place forever and bringing God's light into the world forever. That's what Chanukah was all about. And thank God that the Jews did in fact have that revolt and won that war. And so that the truth of the Bible and the truth of the Torah could continue to live on. Thank you, Joe Gutfeld. And we go now to The Great Lewinsky Stinks, who writes, and I quote, I'm just checking something here. That's why I'm hesitating for a moment. If you see me hesitating, it means because I'm actually checking something to make sure everything's okay here. Yes, it looks like everything's okay. Thank God. Lewinsky Stinks writes, and I quote, "Anti-Semitism's about jealousy," unquote. That's certainly true. A lot of anti-Semitism is based on jealousy. The Jews are rich, the Jews have influence, the Jews have power, the Jews are God's chosen people. A lot of that is jealousy. A lot of that is jealousy. And of course, that's a terrible characteristic, it's a terrible trait. Jealousy is an ugly characteristic in human beings, and it's something that God doesn't want. It's something that God doesn't want. And, you know, on the one hand, a lot of people have contempt for the Jews because of their self-hating behavior. And on the other hand, there is a tremendous amount of envy because people imagine that the Jews are so rich and so powerful and so influential, and that leads to a lot of envy. And of course, a lot of the things that people imagine are just that, imagination. But that type of ugly characteristic, the characteristic of envy, is very sinful. And that's why God warns in the Bible that he will bless those who bless Israel and curse those who curse Israel. He warns people against that. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, "Discuss Pislamic dog hatred," unquote. Yeah, Muslims do hate dogs. They consider dogs to be terrible animals. They despise dogs. And I don't know, maybe it's the fact that dogs are loyal that makes them upset, because dogs, you know, can be very loyal animals. They can be very, very loyal, a dog. And Muslims are backstabbers and treacherous. So maybe that characteristic bothers them. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, "Foxman looks Arab," unquote. Oh, I don't know what he looks like. I don't even want to say what I think he looks like, because I think it would be impolite for me to say what I think he looks like. He looks like something else to me. He looks like a piece of something else to me, which I'm not going to say because I'm going to be a gentleman on this program. But Abe Foxman is a despicable person, and the guy who succeeded him from the Obama administration actually makes Foxman look like a right-winger. The ADL now has a new thing. If you criticize Obama, the ADL comes out and it calls you an anti-Semite if you criticize Obama. You're not allowed to say anything bad about Obama. If you say anything bad about Obama, the Anti-Defamation League will come out and accuse you of anti-Semitism, when in fact Obama himself and the ADL are the worst Jew haters. In other words, the whole world is upside down. The world of Foxman, the world of the Jewish establishment organizations, all upside down. If you want to know what the right position is on an issue, do the opposite of what the Jewish establishment tells you. You 99% of the cases, you'll come out on top. Just do the opposite of what they're saying, because everything they say, their whole world is completely upside down. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, if Pollard spied for Africa, he'd have a medal, unquote. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, if he spied for the Soviet Union, if he spied for any other country, he wouldn't have been treated like this. This is pure anti-Semitism, what they did to Jonathan Pollard. And the fact is, you know, the fact is, when we say he spied for Israel, Israel was supposed to get this information anyway. You know, they lied. Weinberger and the other Jew haters lied and said this was very harmful to America. Well, it was harmful because it was embarrassing to the administration that they were hiding things from Israel about Muslim terrorism, which they were supposed to tell the Israelis to cover up for the Muslim terrorists. That was embarrassing. That's what they thought was harmful. It wasn't harmful at all. Pollard helped the United States and helped Israel. He did a favor for America and a favor for Israel. But of course, if he did spy for Africa, he would get a medal. He could get a medal. You know, he would never have been known. I mean, nobody would even know who he is if he had spied for any other country. It would have been quiet. In most cases, you know that in most cases, people who commit espionage are never even charged. They're just quietly expelled to the country that they were spying for. And they're never even charged. They're never even arrested in most cases. The United States doesn't bother to arrest them in most cases. And in the cases where they do arrest somebody, especially if it's spying for a friendly country. So what was done to Pollard was just an example of the type of vicious anti-Semitism that the establishment in the United States is guilty of. The establishment in the United States, Hollywood, Washington, the news media, the politicians, they are Jew haters. That's a fact, and Pollard is a victim of that. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, Nafrodi may be Gog, meaning Naftali Bennett. I don't know if Gog can be Jewish. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, he won't be the head of Israel. He would be the head of because the whole point of Gog and Magog is they're going to lead a coalition of nations of the world against Israel. So it has to be the leader of a world superpower, of some gigantic world superpower, and all the nations of the world are going to line up behind this superpower to go against Israel. That's what Magog is going to be, the superpower, and Gog is going to be the leader of the superpower. So I don't think that it would be an Israeli politician or an Israeli leader. Is it possible that you'll have a self-hating Jew in charge of a superpower? Let's say a self-hating Jew takes over, God forbid, the United States, becomes president of the United States, God forbid. Is it possible he would lead the campaign of Gog and Magog against Israel? I guess it's possible. I don't know. I guess it is possible. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. And we go now to our great friend Chicago Jew, who writes, Happy Hanukkah. My Hanukkah present from me to you is that you may use my phrase, White Uncle Tom. I would be honored if you also used it, unquote. It's a good phrase, and it's a phrase that unfortunately fits most white people today. Unfortunately, most white people are self-haters, just like most of the Jews are self-haters. I mean, it's sick but true. Very sick but true. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And we go now to our great friend Guns N' Roses fan, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, I was amazed to find out that the Quran says in the second surah that Isa was a son of Miriam, who was the sister of Musa. It is insane. It is really insane. Isa meaning Yeshu, meaning Jesus, was the son of Miriam, who was the sister of Musa. Musa meaning Moses. Miriam, this shows you how insane Muhammad was. That is, you know, his head was, first of all, he was a complete illiterate, and his head was baking in the sun for too long. Miriam, there is a Miriam who was the sister of Moses. Moses did have an older sister, Miriam. Moshe Rabbeinu had an older sister named Miriam. And of course, Mary, the mother of Jesus, in Hebrew, that's also Miriam. So Muhammad heard Miriam, Miriam, and he got all confused. A lot of the Quran is just Muhammad getting confused. He would hear these stories from Jews, because a lot of Jews lived in Mecca and Medina. He would hear all these stories, and then later on, when he had somebody write down what his great thoughts, his great profound thoughts, he was a mental case. But anyway, when someone wrote down this lunatic's thinking, and then they called it the Quran, the problem is he got all the stories mixed up. He has stuff from the Jewish Talmud in the Quran. He has stuff from the Jewish Bible, from the Tanakh. He has stuff from the Christian Bible. He's got it all mixed in there. All types of, just everything mixed up and all distorted. All the stories are distorted, completely distorted. It's such an insane book. It is just such an insane book. King David, according to the Quran, came before Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Moses. King David was actually in the very beginning. He was in the beginning, King David. And of course, King David and Moses and Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, all of them were all Muslims, of course. Well, actually, Isaac and Jacob weren't, but they weren't the ones that God chose. God actually chose Yishmael. So, according to the Quran, it's just everything distorted and insane, just complete lunacy. I do think, if we ever take over in Israel, we'll teach the Quran to Jewish kids, just so that they'll know how crazy it is. We'll have somebody who, but of course, we'll have teachers who aren't going to be respectful toward it. No, teachers are going to tear it apart and show what a lunatic book it is. Just how insane our enemies really are. Thank you, Guns N' Roses fan. And we go now to the great Da Vinci, who writes, and I quote, "Is there a chance that China will become a democratic country like Taiwan?" Unquote. Well, I guess anything is possible. I don't see it happening. I don't see it happening. China has never been democratic. Before the communists took over in 1949, you had the Chiang Kai-shek regime, which was also a brutal dictatorship. You've never had any democracy in China. There's no tradition of it. There's no history of it. And you have hundreds of millions of peasants in China. You got, 1.3, 1.4 billion people living there. Some say as much as a billion and a half. And hundreds of millions of them are peasants. So there are a lot of different clashes going on there. A lot of different cultures, a lot of different clashes. You have the same phenomenon in India, where there are all types of economic and social clashes between different economic and social groups. I don't know. It's hard for me to imagine China as a democratic country. It's just hard for me to imagine that. Right now, they basically have a dictatorship. They call themselves communists, but their economic system is not communist. Their political system is a communist tyranny. They have a tyrannical communist dictatorial system politically, but economically they're basically it's still slave labor. They use slave labor, and then they use certain principles of capitalism with slave labor. Capitalism with slave labor rules. So it's a very, very strange mix that they have there now, but they've succeeded in becoming the world's leading economy. Partly because of their huge population and the huge number of slave laborers that work for virtually nothing. Whether or not that will ever cause the Chinese people to revolt and demand freedom in their country, I don't know. I don't know. It's hard for me to imagine that, but anything is possible. Thank you, Da Vinci. And we go now to our great friend Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, "Discuss Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes." Okay. I don't know if you pronounce it Mewes. I mean, these names, I'm only barely familiar with these names because as part of what I do in JTF, I have to be aware of the news. So I do go to things like the New York Post and other news sources. And you see these names like this pop up over the years. And so I become familiar with it, but I'm not really, really very familiar with these people. I know that Kevin Smith is a director of, is a director and a screenwriter. He directs and screenwrites films. I've never seen any, as far as I know, I've never seen any of his films, so I don't know much about him, except that I know that he uses dirty language. I know he uses filthy language. I know that he smokes pot and he's proud of it. And I know that his films have stupid themes. Even though I've never seen them, I've seen, you know, I know enough to know that, that the themes of his films are stupid. So he's not contributing anything positive to society, that's for sure. That's Kevin Smith. Jason Mewes, if that's how you pronounce his name, he's another actor and producer, and he's also a heroin addict. He's been a heroin addict for many, many years, constant drug use. He's been arrested time and again. He's always on page six of the New York Post when he gets arrested. You know, that's how I learn about him, by the way. Because I read the New York Post, I read the New York Daily News. I just online, by the way. I wouldn't buy these newspapers. I don't want to give them any money. But online, you know, I read the Daily News, I read the New York Post, and I see, you know, I see endless stories about these people. And I know that he's a heroin addict. So he's also hardly a role model for society. And now Smash Islam asks about David Lynch. David Lynch, another film director and author, and his films are very violent films. I've never seen his films either. None of these guys, I've never seen any of their films, so I don't know firsthand what their films are about. I'm just basing it upon articles that I've seen in the New York Post and the Daily News and elsewhere complaining about them. And even though I myself have never seen the films, but when it says in this day and age, when they say that his films are very violent, I can imagine, because, you know, by today's standards, very violent films means really, really extremely violent. And he has a reputation for making very violent films, and it's caused a lot of controversy. So I think that's very, very negative in society. Very negative impact on society. You don't show films like that. It leads to terrible, terrible things. And Bon Jovi, Smash Islam asks about Bon Jovi. Bon Jovi, of course, Bon Jovi is a band, is a rock band. And John Bon Jovi is the songwriter and the singer for the rock band. The one thing I know about him, that I do know about him on a personal level, is that he supported left-wing Democrats. He supported John Kerry in 2004. I remember he was campaigning with John Kerry and raising money for him. And he also supported Barack Hussein Obama in 2008 and went around and campaigned for Obama in 2008. So he's a dedicated left-wing Democrat. So you know what I think of left-wing Democrats. And next, Smash Islam writes, curse. Dudon Mebala Mebala, or Mebala Mebala, he's the black so-called comedian in France who's an open Nazi who says Jews should go to gas chambers. You know, I mean, he looks like an ugly ape. You know, he tells the Jews to go to gas chambers. He looks like an ape. And he badmouths Jews. And, you know, and praises Nazi groups that would consider him to be an ape. So he is, a lot of these blacks that praise Hitler and praise the Nazis, which you hear a lot of this from blacks like Farrakhan, they're praising people who hate them. You know, it shows what high IQs these people have. And when I say these people, I'm not referring to all blacks, but I am referring to black anti-Semites. And next, Napoleon, who is Wuta Wasin Shabazz, another black Muslim Nazi. That's a black Muslim Nazi rapper. I don't listen to his music. I wouldn't love music. He has no music. Rap is not music. It's garbage. But I know he's a rapper. And he's a black Muslim. So obviously he's a piece of garbage. And Idi Amin, that's another black Muslim so-called rapper. Another mental midget. You know, they're so dumb. And they're so ignorant. And they're so disgusting. So, you asked me to curse them, I do curse. Mabala, Mabala, Wutawasin Shabazz and Idi Amin, I curse them because they're Jew haters and they're Muslims and they're evil, vicious people. Thank you, Smash Islam. And we go now to the great Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, have you taken SEPTA public transportation when in Pennsylvania? If so, what mode of transportation, bus, subway, trolley, or train? Any affirmative action stories on SEPTA, unquote. I did take the subway in Philadelphia in the 1970s. I don't even remember what line. I don't remember what line it was. But I did. I do remember taking, I think, City Hall. I remember there was a stop called City Hall because there's a City Hall stop in New York also, in Manhattan. I believe that there was a stop called City Hall. I don't know if there still is. I'm not sure. But I know in those days, I remember seeing us. I remember us at that stop. And we did take the subway in Philadelphia in the 1970s when we were traveling in Philadelphia. Affirmative action. I don't remember any affirmative action stories. It's been a long time since I traveled in Pennsylvania. So I don't remember any affirmative action stories on SEPTA. Sorry about that. Thank you, Binyamin. And we're going now to our great friend Aluf Abir, who writes, and I quote, do you think that the practice of metzitsa bepeh should be made illegal due to health concerns, unquote? Well, first of all, the concept of metzitsa bepeh, the overwhelming majority of Jews who circumcise their sons do not use this system. They wouldn't use the system. They would recoil at the thought of using the system. It's only a small minority of certain Hasidic Jews, and even many Hasidic Jews don't use it, but a certain minority of Hasidic Jews that use it. The Talmud says that the reason for it was for hygienic reasons. The Talmud, by the way, does not, in Judaism, do not require that this be done. It's not required. In fact, the Talmud said that the reason some people were doing it is because they felt that for hygienic reasons that it would actually be good for the baby. But since there does appear to be some sort of health risk, I'm against using it. I think it's a mistake. Should it be made illegal? I would tend to say yes because I think that when you have a situation where there could be some health risk, the whole purpose of it, according to the Talmud, the whole purpose of it was for hygienic reasons. Now they've turned it into some sort of ritual, but the whole thing was for hygienic reasons. And since in some cases it seems to have the opposite effect, you know, I would be deeply concerned about this. And again, it's something that the vast majority of people who circumcise their babies do not do. Including the vast majority, I'm talking about the vast majority of Orthodox Jews, do not do this. Thank you, Aluf Abir. And we go now to a new JTFer, Uncle Bourbon. Welcome to JTF, Uncle Bourbon. It's good to have you. Uncle Bourbon writes, and I quote, have you read any novels by the author Michael Crichton, unquote? I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. Is it Crichton? I don't know. No, I never have. I never have. I'm sorry. I apologize for my ignorance. Uncle Bourbon now writes, and what is your position on global warming, unquote? Global warming is a hoax. It's junk science. This is pure nonsense. In the 1970s, when I was a teenager, it was global freezing. They always told us the world, we're going to have a new ice age and the world is going to freeze. That was their gimmick then, to prevent people from developing sources of energy, to prevent America from becoming energy independent and to prevent us from developing sources of energy. Now they say global warming. It's just, you know, and by the way, the past few years have been so cold in so many parts of the world, including the United States. It's just so absurd. A lot of them don't say global warming anymore. A lot of them now say climate change. Because if you say global warming, people think you're crazy now because the temperatures have been way below normal in many parts of the world, including the United States. This is complete baloney. Complete baloney. And the purpose of this is to prevent us from drilling for oil, from using coal. America has enough coal, just the coal. America has enough clean coal, and we have the ability to develop this coal in a clean way. We have enough clean coal to completely put Saudi Arabia out of business. We have enough shale to put Saudi Arabia and Iran out of business and to stop these Muslim terrorist oil-producing countries from ripping us off for trillions of dollars and from being the great security danger and the great risk, national security risk that they have become. We can put an end to serious Islamic terrorism, because you need major financing to have really serious Islamic terrorism. We could put an end to this and send these Islamic regimes back to the impoverished state that they were in before oil became such an expensive commodity in the 1970s. We can do that if we became serious about using coal, about shale, about fracking, about drilling. And by the way, I'm in favor of electric cars. I'm in favor of electric cars. If we can develop ways to reduce our dependence on oil and reduce our dependence, anything that reduces our dependence on these Muslim terrorist nations and stops them from having the money they need to build nuclear bombs and to threaten all of civilization, I'm in favor of it. I'm in favor of electric cars. I'm in favor of, wind power and ocean power and sun, getting energy from the sun, solar power. You know, I'm in favor of that too, but I don't believe that solar and wind and these other things that the environmental groups promote, they're just not enough to do everything we need to do in society to have a modern economy. We can't only use those things. And so there has to be a healthy mix, and we have to use everything at our disposal. And global warming, or now they call it climate change, global warming, global freezing, whatever it is, this is all intended to prevent us from developing our full potential. And the consequence is trillions and trillions of dollars have been passed from Western society to Muslim terrorist nations that are committed to our destruction. That's why it is so important that this myth, this lie, this nonsense of global warming and other scientific nonsense, that we have to refute this, and we have to make clear that the greatest threat to us, the real threat to us, comes from Islamic terrorism, and Islamic terrorism is financed by our dependence on Muslim oil, on Muslim oil exports. And if we're not going to drill, and we're not going to do shale, and we're not going to do fracking, and we're not going to do all these other things, we're not going to do coal, and I'm talking about clean coal, we're not going to do these things because supposedly there's an environmental issue or it causes global warming or other nonsense. This is insanity. This is insanity. This would be a much better world if we didn't listen to this insanity. Thank you, Uncle Bourbon. And we go now to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, talk about Anat Hasika, a Zionist Muslim Arab, if that makes any sense, unquote. Yeah, I don't know anything about her. I know she wants to run in the Jewish Home Party, which is a party that I don't like, Habayat HaYehudi. And, I mean, that's just an example of what the party is like. You know, they have Arabs running in their party. And again, I don't know any. She may not be a bad Arab. She may not be a bad Arab. Although, a couple of things she said, though, that I don't like. Okay? And I'm not saying that she said it with bad intent. Maybe she has good intentions. And she may not be a bad person. She may be a good person. It's possible. But I think that her influence is bad in this respect. She creates the false impression that there are a lot of Muslims and Arabs who are pro-Israel. And that's a lie. That's a lie. There are almost none. She will get almost zero Arab votes. Arabs will not vote for her. In fact, if she tried to campaign in Arab villages, they would kill her. They'd rape her and kill her. So when you have a rare exception like her, sometimes that can be very bad because it creates a false impression that this is that it's widespread. Because Jews always want to believe that there really are many. What did Naftali Bennett, the head of the Jewish Home Party, he said 99.9% of the Arabs are loyal to Israel. I mean, the most absurd statement you can make. I mean, just absurd. The truth is 95% of the Arabs in Israel vote for parties that are openly committed to the destruction of Israel. 95% of them vote for those parties. So, you know, this type of insanity of this mythology, unfortunately, I think is nurtured by people like her. Because she tells Arabs you should serve in the Israeli army and you should be loyal to Israel and citizens of Israel. That we don't need. We need to encourage the Arabs to leave Israel. They're not loyal to us. She may be a very rare exception, but they're not loyal to us, and they're not going to be loyal to us. We need them out. We don't need them serving in the Israeli army. We need them out of Israel, and we need them living somewhere else. Dr. Dan now writes, too, talk about intermarriage and Jews who date or want to date non-Jews, unquote. Well, intermarriage is the destruction of the Jewish people. It's the end of the Jewish people. We see the effects all over the world. The Jewish population in every country is going down every year, except for Israel. Israel, where you have an overwhelmingly Jewish population, is the one country where the Jewish population is going up, where you have a natural growth rate from Jews having babies. But intermarriage is the end of the Jewish people. A non-Jewish mother will give a Jewish man non-Jewish children. His children will not be Jewish, will never be accepted as Jewish, and he will have no place in the world to come if he intermarries. And a Jewish mother who marries a non-Jewish man, she'll have no place in the world to come. This is a very, very serious sin. Very, very serious sin. The Torah strictly forbids this type of sin. And you know, the question really comes down to this. God says he doesn't want us to do this. He says you should not give your sons to their daughters and your daughters to their son and their daughters, your daughters to their sons. You shall not do this. And we're warned about it in the Torah. If the Torah and if God, the creator of the universe, warn us not to do this, shouldn't it be obvious that we should be listening to what he says? Obviously, he has a good reason for saying this. And this spells the end of the Jewish people. Far more Jews historically have been destroyed spiritually than physically. The Holocaust and all the terrible things that happened to the Jewish people is only a tiny percentage of the Jews we've lost historically. We should be a huge nation right now. We should have 1 billion Jews in the world right now because we're thousands of years old. Look at the Chinese people are thousands of years old. Look at China. Chinese people are thousands of years old, and they have 1.5 billion people. We should have 1.5 billion people. We both started thousands of years ago. How come we don't have 1.5 billion people? And they do. Because the vast majority of Jews assimilated over the years. And so we only have a tiny percentage that have survived. That's the tragedy and the disaster of intermarriage. It's a catastrophe. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And we go now to our great friend, righteous Indian Gentile, who writes, and I quote, "Why is Israel selling arms to Azerbaijan hurting Armenians?" Unquote. Azerbaijan, of course, is Muslim, and the Armenians are Christians. Israel's arms industry is no different from the arms industry in every other country. They're interested in making a profit. They're interested in selling their weapons to the highest bidder and using the money and bringing the money back in order to have research so that they could develop even more sophisticated weapons. That's what the arms industry in every country does. And Israel is no different. Should there be consideration about selling arms to a Muslim country, should that be taken into consideration? I think it should be. I think it should be. Right now, righteous Indian Gentile writes, and I quote, "Talk about the possibility of European civil war with Muslims," unquote. Well, of course, there's always a possibility that in some countries there could be a civil war if enough Muslims go into a country and want to take the country over. That theoretically could happen, yes. I really wonder, though, if the Europeans are not so materialistic now and so unconcerned about the future of their country and their society that they would just allow the Muslims to take over and not even care and not even resist. I think that's what's happening now in European countries, and I think it's an example of the decadence that we see in Western society in general. It's enabling the Muslims to come in and take over. But is there a possibility that the Muslims could go too far and could really frighten the local population and that this could lead to a civil war in some countries? It's possible. It's theoretically possible. Thank you, righteous Indian Gentile. And we go now to the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, "Discuss the torture claims against Bush, etc." Unquote. Well, Muslim terrorists deserve to be tortured. And I'm not afraid to use the word torture. Of course, under American law, you're not allowed to use torture, and they claim that the techniques they use were not torture. I don't care about the term. I think that Muslim terrorists should be tortured. That's what they would do to people if they capture people. They deserve to have done to them everything that they want to do to their innocent victims. And if it will save the lives of innocent people by forcing them to reveal where the terrorists are hidden and what Muslim terrorist plots are going to be hatched, if it will save the lives of innocent people, I think they should be tortured. Tag Mechir Tzedek now writes, too, would or how would you stop the blacks, communists rioting and demonstrating, unquote. People who are rioting should be shot to death. If someone's running in the streets, throwing Molotov cocktails and setting stores on fire and endangering people's lives, they should be killed. They should be shot to death. You know, somebody endangers your life, you have a right to defend yourself. People have a right to self-defense. The problem is we've gotten used to in our society allowing murderers like this to roam the streets with no resistance, and the police back off and everybody backs off and lets them do basically what they want to do. And I don't think it should be allowed. I think that if people are going to engage in that type of very dangerous and deadly violence, that society has a right to protect itself. Tag Mechir Tzedek now writes, 3, Israeli elections. Actually, Tag Mechir, you read my mind. I've already spoken about the Israeli elections in my opening. I did a very extensive opening on Israeli elections. Thank you, Tag Mechir Tzedek. And now we go to the great paper cut, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, homosexuals are creepy. They have taken over all of my cooking channels. Why do non-homos want to be around these creeps?" Unquote. Paper cut, I have no idea. I have no idea. I agree with you completely. The only thing that I could see that's good about this is, I don't know, I think on the cooking channels, I would assume that most of the food being cooked is very unhealthy. So I'm glad at least that they're eating unhealthy food. You know, at least that should give us a little solace, that they're eating things that are very unhealthy. They have very unhealthy lifestyles in general. I mean, their lifestyle obviously is very unhealthy. So at least we can be happy about the fact that they're probably eating very greasy food loaded with lots of cholesterol and saturated fat, a lot of sugar and a lot of other things that are very bad for the heart and that cause all other types of health problems. There's no question that they are taking over, and that it has come to the point where, first of all, for years now, there's been affirmative action for homosexuals. If you now identify yourself as homosexual when you're trying to go into a college or university, you automatically get a scholarship. You'll get a scholarship faster as a homosexual now than you will as a black person. In the past, black was the thing that automatically got you in. It's unbelievable. And the same thing with loans, and the same thing with jobs and promotions and corporations. If you're homosexual, you go up very fast. That's the type of insane society we have. We were deliberately promoting and encouraging this type of behavior. And the frightening aspect of this is that God does not tolerate this behavior, and this is what leads to the destruction of nations and of civilizations. Entire nations and civilizations have been wiped out because of this. So I don't know what the future of America is going to be unless there is some sort of reaction to this, and unless these things turn around, And unless a large number of Americans finally react to this and say enough is enough, I don't think America is going to survive. Because this type of behavior God does not tolerate. We see historically, this is the type of behavior that leads to the destruction of nations. So let's hope that the American people wake up before it's too late. Thank you, Paper Cut. And we go now to our great friend, Confederate Kahanist, who writes, and I quote, "Hello, Chaim, what do you think of the fact that some people call women chicks? Thanks and God bless," unquote. What's wrong with it? I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think calling a woman a chick, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I know feminists despise that. Ever since I was a kid, they despise that. I'm surprised, Confederate Kahanist, that someone, because you come from a different generation, I'm surprised that this is an issue in your generation as well. In my generation, it was a big issue. Feminists did not tolerate the use of that term. You weren't allowed to call a girl a chick. I mean, this was considered to be the ultimate insult. I think it's ridiculous. I think it's ridiculous. I don't think chicks is an insulting term. I don't think it's insulting at all. That's my opinion anyway. Thank you, Confederate Kahanist, and I want to thank everybody for another program I very much enjoy doing. Until next week, Shalom.